Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We're up to Book 7, Chapter 6. The old count went home, and Natasha and Petya promised to return very soon, but as it was still early, the hunt went farther. At midday, they put the hounds into a ravine thickly overgrown with young trees. Nicholas, standing in a fallow field, could see all his whips. Facing him lay a field of winter rye, and there his own huntsman stood alone in a hollow behind a hazel bush. The hounds had scarcely been loosed before Nicholas heard one he knew, Voltorn, giving tongue at intervals. Other hounds joined in, now pausing and now again giving tongue. A moment later he heard a cry from the wooded ravine that a fox had been found, and the whole pack, joining together, rushed along the ravine towards the rye field and away from Nicholas. He saw the whips in their red caps galloping along the edge of the ravine. He even saw the hounds and was expecting a fox to show itself at any moment on the rye field opposite. The huntsman, standing in the hollow, moved and loosed his borzois, and Nicholas saw a queer, short-legged red fox with a fine brush going hard across the field. The borzois bore down on it. Now they drew close to the fox, which began to dodge between the field in sharper and sharper curves, trailing its bush, when suddenly a strange white borzoi dashed in, followed by a black one, and everything was in confusion. The borzois formed a star-shaped figure, scarcely swaying their bodies and with tails turned away from the centre of the group. Two huntsmen galloped up to the dogs, one in a red cap, the other a stranger in a green coat. "What's this?" thought Nicholas. "Where's that huntsman from? He's not Uncle's man." The huntsman got the fox, but stayed there a long time without strapping it to the saddle. Their horses, bridled and with high saddles, stood near them, and there, too, the dogs were lying. The huntsmen waved their arms and did something to the fox. Then, from that spot came the sound of a horn, with the signal agreed on in case of a fight. "That's Iligan's huntsman having a row with our Ivan," said Nicholas's groom. Nicholas sent the man to call Natasha and Petya to him and rode at a foot pace to the place where the whips were getting the hounds together. Several of the field galloped to the spot where the fight was going on. Nicholas dismounted and with Natasha and Petya, who had ridden up, stopped near the hounds, waiting to see how the matter would end. Out of the bushes came the huntsman who had been fighting and rode towards his young master with the fox tied to his crupper. While still at a distance, he took off his cap and tried to speak respectfully, but he was pale and breathless and his face was angry. One of his eyes was black, but he probably was not even aware of it. "What has happened?" asked Nicholas. "A likely thing. Killing a fox our dogs had hunted, and it was my grey bitch that caught it. Go to law, indeed. He snatches out of the fox. I gave him one with the fox. Here it is on my saddle. Do you want a taste of this?" said the huntsman, pointing to his dagger and probably imagining himself still speaking to his foe. Nicholas, not stopping to talk to the man, asked his sister and Petya to wait for him and rode to the spot where the enemy's, Iligan's, hunting party was. The victorious huntsman rode off to join the field, and there, surrounded by inquiring sympathisers, recounted his exploits. The facts were that Iligan, with whom the Rostovs had a quarrel and were at law, hunted over places that belonged by custom to the Rostovs and had now, as if purposely, sent his men to the very woods the Rostovs were hunting and let his man snatch a fox their dogs had chased. Nicholas, though he had never seen Iligan, with his usual absence of moderation in judgment, hated him cordially from reports of his arbitrariness and violence, and regarded him as his bitterest foe. He rode in angry agitation towards him, firmly grasping his whip and fully prepared to take the most resolute and desperate steps to punish his enemy. Hardly had he passed an angle of the wood before a stout gentleman in a beaver cap came riding towards him on a handsome raven-black horse, accompanied by two hunt servants. Instead of an enemy, Nicholas found in Illigan a stately and courteous gentleman who was particularly anxious to make the young count's acquaintance. Having ridden up to Nicholas, Illigan raised his beaver cap and said his much regretted what had occurred, and would have the man punished who had allowed himself to seize a fox hunted by someone else's borzois. He hoped to become better acquainted with the count, and invited him to draw his covert. Natasha, afraid that her brother would do something dreadful, had followed him in some excitement. Seeing the enemies exchanging friendly greetings, she rode up to them. Illigan lifted his beaver cap still higher to Natasha, and said with a pleasant smile that the young countess resembled Diana in her passion for the chase, as well as in her beauty, of which he had heard much. To expiate his huntsman's offence, Illigan pressed to Rostov's to come to an upland of his about a verst away, which he usually kept for himself and which he said swarmed with hares. Nicholas agreed, and the hunt, now doubled, moved on. The way to Illigan's upland was across the fields. The hunt servants fell in line. The masters rode together. Uncle, Rostov, and Illigan kept stealthily glancing at one another's dogs, trying not to be observed by their companions and searching uneasily for rivals to their own borzois. Rostov was particularly struck by the beauty of a small, purebred, red-spotted bitch on Illigan's leash, slender but with muscles like steel, a delicate muzzle and prominent black eyes. He had heard of the swiftness of Illigan's borzois, and in that beautiful bitch saw a rival to his own milker. In the middle of a sober conversation begun by Illigan about the year's harvest, Nicholas pointed to that red-spotted bitch. "A fine little bitch, that," said he in a careless tone. "Is she swift?" "That one? Yes, she's a good dog. Gets what she's after," answered Illigan indifferently of the red-spotted bitch, Urza, for which a year before he had given a neighbour three families of house serfs. "So in your parts, too, the harvest is nothing to boast of, Count," he went on, continuing the conversation they had begun, and considering it polite to return the young Count's compliment, Illigan looked at his borzois and picked out Milka, who attracted his attention by her breadth. "That black-spotted one of yours is fine, well-shaped," said he. "Yes, she's fast enough," replied Nicholas, and thought, "If only a full-grown hare would cross the field now, I'd show you what sort of a borzois she is." And turning to his groom, he said he would give a ruble to anyone who found a hare. "I don't understand," continued Illigan, "how some sportsmen can be so jealous about game and dogs. For myself, I can tell you, Count, I enjoy riding in company such as this. What could be better?" He again raised his cap to Natasha. "But as for counting skins and what one takes, I don't care about that." "Of course not. Or being upset because someone else's borzoi and not mine catches something. All I care about is to enjoy seeing the chase. Is it not so, Count?" "For I consider that." "Atu!" came the long-drawn cry of one of the borzoi whippers-in who had halted. He stood on a knoll in the stubble, holding his whip aloft, and again repeated his long-drawn cry, "Atu!" This call and the uplifted whip meant that he saw a sitting hare. "Ah, he has found one, I think," said Illigan carelessly. "Well, let us course it, Count." "Yes, we must ride up. Shall we both course it?" answered Nicholas, seeing in Urza and Uncle's red rugé two rivals he had never yet had a chance of pitting against his own borzois. "And suppose they do outdo my milker at once," he thought, as he rode with Uncle and Illigan towards the hare. "A full-grown one?" asked Illigan as he approached the whip who had sighted the hare, and not without agitation he looked round and whistled to Urza. "And you, Michael Nikanorovitch?" he said, addressing Uncle. The latter was riding with a sullen expression on his face. "How can I join in? Why, you've given a village for each of your borzois. That's it, come on. Yours are worth thousands. Try yours against one another, you two, and I'll look on. Rugay, hey, hey, he shouted. Rugayashka, he added, involuntarily by this diminutive expression, his affection and the hopes that he placed on his red borzoi. Natasha saw and felt the agitation the two elderly men and her brother were trying to conceal, and her was herself excited by it. The huntsman stood halfway up the knoll, holding up his whip, and the gentlefolk rode up to him, and, at a footpace, the hounds that were far off on the horizon turned away from the hare and the whips, but not the gentlefolk also moved away. All were moving slowly and sedately. "How is it pointing?" asked Nicholas, riding 100 paces towards the whip who had sighted the hare. But before the whip could reply, the hare, scenting the frost coming next morning, was unable to rest and leapt up. The pack on leash rushed downhill in full cry after the hare, and from all sides the borzois that were not on leash darted after the hounds and the hare. All the hunt, who had been moving slowly, shouted stop, calling in the hounds, while the borzois' whips, with a cry of atu, galloped across the field, setting the borzois on the hare. The tranquil Ilagin, Nicholas, Natasha, and Uncle flew, reckless of where or how they went, seeing only the borzois and the hare, and fearing only to lose sight even for an instant of the chase. The hare they had started was a strong and swift one. When he jumped up, he did not run at once, but pricked his ears, listening to the shouting and trampling that resounded from all sides at once. He took a dozen bounds, not very quickly, letting the borzois gain on him, and finally, having chosen his direction and realized his danger, laid back his ears and rushed off headlong. He had been lying in the stubble, but in front of him was the autumn sowing, where the ground was soft. The two borzois of the huntsman who had sighted him, having been the nearest, were the first to see and pursue him, but they had not gone far before Iligan's red-spotted Urza passed them, got within a length, flew at the hare with terrible swiftness, aiming at his scut, and thinking she had seized him, rolled over like a ball. The hare arched his back and bounded off yet more swiftly. From behind Urza rushed the broad-haunched black-spotted Milka, and began rapidly gaining on the hare. "Milashka, dear!" rose Nicholas's triumphant cry. It looked as if Milka would immediately pounce on the hare, but she overtook him and flew past. The hare had squatted. Again the beautiful Urza reached him, but when close to the hare's scut, paused as if measuring the distance so as not to make a mistake this time, but seized his hind leg. "Urza, darling," Iligan wailed in a voice unlike his own. Urza did not hearken to his appeal. At the very moment when she would have seized her prey, the hare moved and darted along the bulk between the winter rye and the stubble. Again Urza and Milka were abreast, running like a pair of carriage horses, and began to overtake the hare, but it was easier for the hare to run on the bulk, and the borzois did not overtake him so quickly. "Rugay, Rugayshka, that's it, come on," came a third voice just then, and Uncle's red borzoi, straining and curving its back, caught up with the two foremost borzois, pushed ahead of them, regardless of the terrible strain, put on speed close to the hare, knocked it off the bulk onto the rye field, again put on speed still more viciously, sinking to his knees in the muddy field, and all one could see was how, muddying his back, he rolled over with the hare. A ring of borzois surrounded him. A moment later everyone had drawn up round the crowd of dogs. Only the delighted uncle dismounted and cut off a pad, shaking the hare for the blood to drip off. And anxiously glancing round with restless eyes while his arms and legs twitched, he spoke without himself knowing whom, to, or what about. "That's it, come on, that's a dog. There, it has beaten them all, the 1,000-ruble as well as the 1-ruble borzois. That's it, come on. said he, panting and looking wrathfully around as if he were abusing someone, and as if they were all his enemies, had insulted him, and only now had he at last succeeded in justifying himself. "There are your 1,000-ruble ones. That's it. Come on. Rugay, here's a pad for you," he said, throwing down the hare's muddy pad. "You've deserved it. That's it. Come on." She'd tired herself out. She'd run it down 3 times by herself, said Nicholas, also not listening to anyone and regardless of whether he were heard or not. "But what is there in running across it like that?" said Illigan's groom. Once she had missed it and turned it away, any mongrel could take it, Illigan was saying at the same time, breathless from his gallop and his excitement. At the same moment, Natasha, without drawing breath, screamed joyously, ecstatically, and so piercingly that it set everyone's ears tingling. By that shriek she expressed what the others expressed by all talking at once, and it was so strange that she must herself have been ashamed of so wild a cry, and everyone else would have been amazed at it at any other time. Uncle himself twisted up the hare, threw it neatly and smartly across his horse's back, as if by that gesture he meant to rebuke everybody, and with an air of not wishing to speak to anyone, mounted his bay and rode off. The others all followed, dispirited and shamefaced, and only much later were they able to regain their former affectation of indifference. For a long time they continued to look at Red Rugay, who, his arched back spattered with mud and clanking the ring of his leash, walked along just behind Uncle's horse with the serene air of a conqueror. "Well, I am like any other dog as long as it's not a question of coursing, but when it is, then look out," his appearance seemed to Nicholas to be saying. When, much later, Uncle rode up to Nicholas and began talking to him, he felt flattered that after what had happened, Uncle deigned to speak to him. All right, there we have it, another chapter down. And the hunt is continuing and growing even bigger with some kind of enemy of the Rostov family, joining in with their hunt. And I like the ending of this chapter, especially that very testosterone-fueled Uncle Nikolai and, who was that third character? Illigan. All pretending to be indifferent about whose dog was superior. And, you know, if we could find a hare, you know, I hear there's good hares over here, let's just go check it out. And they're all pretending like they're not about to compete to see who's got the quickest and best hunting dog. And then, of course, as soon as the hare shows itself, it's all out warfare. Rusafi said, "It's interesting that Tolstoy spends so much time on these hunting chapters. I think they may be some of the longest in the book, which makes me think that it signifies something important, either for the rest of the book, or at the very least, Nikolai's character development. Either that, or Tolstoy simply has a strong affection for gruesome hunting scenes. Either way, it seems like the chase may be a good, society-approved way for Nikolai to get out his anger and aggression. He seems to have a mind for its strategy that comes out of his affection for the military, where everything has a place and use. In any case, we saw him able to rein in his temper when he meets Illigan. Do you think Illigan was insincere or sincere in his apologies? Will he and Nikolai develop a friendship, perhaps one based on pretending you don't have anything to prove while secretly showing off and spending lots of money?" JP said, "With regard to Tolstoy's experience with hunting, there is a footnote in my version which states that Tolstoy was invited on a hunt by a neighbour while he was writing the book. Maud suggests that this was probably the basis for his descriptions over these chapters." That's really interesting. I was just about to say, these chapters seem like when you're midway through a novel and you go away to experience something and you take the novel with you, like you might go away for a little weekend at the beach and then all of a sudden the characters in your book have a weekend away at the beach, that kind of thing. It seemed very much like that to me. And so it's interesting to see that the Maud, or one of the Maud translations, actually has a footnote saying that that's the case. Turtle Vader said, "Awesome insight. Thanks for sharing." DeFleury responded to Rusafi's comment by saying, I don't think Nicholas reined in his temper. I think he got defeated socially by a better combatant. This Illigan has the authority of old age and exquisite manners and a better dog. And he took control of the situation immediately. Nicholas, a good soldier, a bad leader, probably forgot to be mad and just wanted more praise and acceptance from this impressive guy. I myself wondered if the incompetent Rostovs are accidentally on the wrong side of this legal dispute. Certainly it's childish of the Rostovs to think other people should stay away from the best hunting grounds because the Rostovs might want to hunt there. Ha ha. The men sounded exactly like ladies who have spent all day getting spruced up for a special occasion. Lovely dress. What, this old rag? La la, I was scrubbing the floors and didn't have time to change. It was very reminiscent of that. I especially liked Uncle, you know, knowing he was probably going to win. He had a lot of confidence in his dog, but saying, oh, you know, guys, I'll probably sit this one out because, you know, your dog is way better than mine. I'll let you guys battle it out. And then, you know, on the sly, he comes in for the win. Cobby X said, all these hunting chapters aren't doing much for me. I've been enjoying them because I've found them to be quite descriptive. Not overly descriptive. I do get a bit bored when settings are just described in too much detail. But I have felt very much like I'm there in the scene, which is nice. Brian E. Denton responded to Cobby X by saying, the first time I read them, I felt the same way. But now the hunting chapters are some of my favourites. I'm not sure what changed. Something I'll have to think about. Well, there we go. That's going to do us for today's episode. Thanks very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.